This is a replay of the Tuesday night, May 26th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call or you didn't get on the air, because we had a lot of people waiting when the show went off. Deal is, call early, because if you call right about 10 o'clock, I guarantee you, you will be on the air. And I hope you'll do that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and if it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. We're going to start with the history of Detroit Top 40 Radio. It all started when Gary asked about that, and we've got Stan that we're going to bring in here in a moment, because he grew up there, so he'll be able to correct some of my errors. But before we do, I want you to know, I say I give my all for you. Well, tonight it includes a lot of pain. Yeah, as I sit in this studio, and this has happened before for weeks on end, but it had gone away until today. Sit on the studio, and I'm looking for things, all of your requests, and I've got them all here, by the way, and I don't know that we'll do them in order, but we'll do them. But I don't seem to notice, until I look down and most of my left hand is purple, certainly a dark red. And as I look further, sure enough, the no-see-ums, or the midges, or whatever the heck they call these, I think that's what they are anyway, little bites. And John and I have been going around for the last hour trying to figure out, how do they get in? Where are they? And of course, you don't see them. That's why there are no see-ums. I do see them when occasionally one will land on a computer screen or something. They'll say, oh, yeah, there it is. But I put all the antihistamines and cortisones and above all of the bug spray that I was wearing every day that I was in the studio for about a month. But, let the guard down, no problem. And here I am again, so I am just scratching like a hound. All right, enough about me. Let's talk about Detroit. And as far as I know, Detroit's first full-time top 40 station was WJBK. And by the way, in 1957, Casey Kasem did nights there, but started in 1956, and it was top 40 until 1964. So we're going to bring in Stan to see if he concurs with that, and then we'll go from there. All right, Stan, so you were there. Were you there in 1956 when JBK goes full-time top 40?
Yes, it was, Raleigh, and thanks for having me on.
Always.
And I'm not here to correct you. I'm just here to say what a listener perspective on Detroit radio, and you've got more history about Detroit radio than anyone I know.
Well,
about all radio, in fact.
Well, nonetheless, you were there, and the stuff I know, most of which I'm doing just from recall, and one thing I did look up. But so in April of 58, JBK, which was a store station, of course, and we'll get to that later, but started to put out weekly music surveys. Those were the first surveys that I know of that were top 40 surveys that they were handing around to the record stores. And long about that time, WXYZ 1270 goes top 40. Is that your recollection as well?
Yes, that's about the time.
Okay. Now
I remember the kid next door that I learned to play baseball and played catch with had three teenage sisters.
Uh-huh.
They always had the radio on. They had the records playing all the time. And I was there most of the day during the summer, and And even at night, they had a street light in front of their house, and we played against the steps with the rubber ballers. And the teenagers were doing what they would do, listening to records, dancing, making out. And here we're playing against the steps, and all this time the music is in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
From the radio and in records.
And interestingly, by the early 60s, XYZ overtakes JBK in the ratings. Now, long about then, and this is one that I remember only because of their teenage engineer there, but WEXL 1340 goes top 40. Do you remember that?
I remember WEXL, yeah. They played mostly country, though.
Well, that was later. That's right. They went full-time country in 63. But in 62, they tried top 40. The interesting thing about that was Ed Wolfram was their kid engineer, and he incorporated his newly created DI, so in other words, the interface box that would allow you to connect the microphone directly to the board, and that became the Wolf box, and he went to Motown, was an engineer for there, and all that wonderful wonderful deep bass and all that came from his DI unit. So actually, he became known for responsible for the Motown sound, but for a minute there, he was, as a kid, 16 years old at WEXL 1340. Before he's 17, of course, like you say, they go country. Now, it's ironic because, of course, I mentioned that JBK ultimately goes country, and that's not till later. JBK, as WDEE, destroys them. But okay, so now we come to WKMH/WKNR. Now, as far as I know, when it was WKMH, it was not top 40. Is that your recollection as well?
Yeah, it was mostly adult,
yes.
Contemporary, I guess you'd call it, or
yes.
Middle of the road.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they had those names back then, but I remember I used to listen to WKMH a lot because they had Van Patrick Sports.
Sure.
The announcer of the Detroit Tigers and the Detroit Lions.
Right.
And they had a disc jockey named Robin Seymour.
Oh, yes.
And in 1956, I think it was, the Four Lads had a record out called Bobbin' with the Robin.
Uh-huh.
And he made that his theme song. And he played, you know, the Pat Boone,
right.
And adult hits. But once in a while, he would throw in, like, G by the Crows.
But the interesting thing about Robin Seymour, of course, is he winds up with a TV show. And nothing better than TV to get awareness up there. So that was a.
But even in the mid 50s, he would throw in, like Earth Angel, or he'd throw in, all of a sudden from out of nowhere,
right.
Just all of a sudden you'd hear, a doo wop song in there.
Absolutely.
Among all the Pat Boone stuff and the.
He was a Detroit boy as well. In fact, he worked on the Lone Ranger show, as did Casey. So that was interesting beginnings. But all right, so I agreed that KMH. And by the way, you know why they had the Tigers, right?
Yeah,
because Fred Knorr owned them. And
right.
So Fred Knorr owns the Tigers, and he's vacationing in Fort Lauderdale and scalds himself to death. And that was 1960. And that's when I remember that, too. I'm like, how do you scald yourself to death? You slip in the bathtub. You know, I always wondered, what's the story there? I never did find anything out. But his widow, of course, Mrs. Nellie Knorr, she hires Mike Joseph in 1963. And next thing you know, Lucky Keener 13, WKNR, is born. Halloween 1963. That your recollection as well?
Yes.
Okay.
When they just started out with with no DJs, just played music for about 2 weeks.
Yes.
Which was really nice because I was a lot of oldies, and that was, to me, the high part of WKNR.
Right. I would agree. They had a number of interesting people walk through there, but yeah, I'd say at the high point. Now, of course, that's Halloween 1963. Within less than a year, WJBK abandons the format. They bring out Just Beautiful Music. You might remember that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then they added some vocals and all that, and I think they briefly went back to top 40 in 1969. Do you remember that?
No, I wasn't in the country in 69.
Ah, okay.
But WJBK was my go-to station
in
the early 60s.
Oh, sure.
I'd say from 61 to 64.
Don't blame you. But yeah, it did. It went briefly back to top 40 in 69, and then next thing you know, it's WDEE country. And so here we have, we're into 64 now. We've still got XYZ in the format, and we've got Keener in the format. And of course, 63, that's when RKO took over CKLW. And sure enough, 1964, they debut top 40. And it was lagging behind Keener for probably 3 years until in April of 67, that's when they debuted Boss Radio. You know, Paul Drew was the PD and Drake was consulting. And by August of 67, they dethrone Keener. And they're the de facto number one station. It doesn't hurt that in addition to an FM, who cares, they had a TV counterpart, Channel 8. And they've been doing dance shows since Robin Seymour's Swing Time, and then later Tom Shannon. Right. So that's your recollection as well, right?
They had, CKLW had a Bud Davies.
Yes, in a late, top 10 late dance 50s. Party. Yes, yeah. yes, absolutely.
And they were on TV as yeah. well as on the radio.
Yeah.
And they were also mostly middle of the road until Rosalie Trombley came.
Yeah,
music director. Yeah,
right. They had RKO took them in a real Boss Radio vein about 6 months before they promoted Rosalie the receptionist to music, and good idea for them. That's for sure. But so we have Keener throwing in the towel in 1972. And meanwhile, here we have a momentary competitor, and I say momentary. Do you remember in 1971, WCAR 1130 goes top 40?
I remember WCAR, but I didn't listen to their top 40 much.
Yeah, Ken Draper was their consultant, and it was less than a year. And so, for the 70s, really, you've got CKLW, and really that's about it. But there, CanCon started in 1971, and the Canadian government, of course, told RKO to get lost in 68, and it took them a little while, took them to 1970 to do it. But and then Chum bought the station in 75. But through the 70s, it was loosely top 40, but they were kind of morphing to AC. Is that what you remember?
Yep.
Okay. And then we have the good old Bartell. They were starting to buy standalone FMs from Storer. So Storer sells them WDEE FM 93.1, and here comes WDRQ top 40. And they were doing that till they went disco, and that died quickly, and then went back top 40, and then urban. Is that about what you remember?
Yes.
All right. Have I missed anybody?
Well, from the time when, around 1964, and I don't know if they are top 40, but the British invasion kind of drew me to full-time WJLB and WCHB 1400 and 1440.
Yeah.
And, it says Fast 40 survey on their, I've got a bunch of survey things here from different stations.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm not sure if they were, if you'd consider them top 40, but they were, the black-owned stations,
yeah.
and to me, I completely listened to them from, I'd say, 65 till I got drafted in the service, and when I came back, I put it right back on WJLB and WCHB.
You know, I would agree with that. I didn't put them on the list, of course, because they really were soul stations and positioned that way in the market. But there's no doubt about it, especially with JLB, AM 1400, with, Al Perkins. And, they were the Detroit sound probably more than anyone else. And that was real big. But they never really positioned themselves that way. They were smart. They were going right after black communities and, to an extent, like you say, teenagers. So they were not shy about that. But it was great because JLB would embrace a lot of the R&B that the quote-unquote top 40 stations wouldn't touch.
Exactly. Yep.
So, and then, of course, they got Martha Jean, the queen. So,
She came from Memphis in 1963, it was. WDAI, was it? In Memphis? WDIA.
Yeah, DIA in Memphis, right. I thought it was about 66, but yeah, she was certainly there during the 67 riots. And
she was.
I think she was on like the air for 48 straight hours or something. I mean, she was absolutely a force. And of course, the Perker, Al Perkins, broke a lot of R&B that the top 40 stations wouldn't touch. So yeah, I would agree with you. If I was sitting there regularly, I would have been a CHB and JLB girl as well. So. But that was it as far as I knew when Gary was asking, because he said he didn't know anything about it other than, you know, of course, Keener and CK. I said, well, it's a lot different than that.
Yeah, we had a few other stations that were around the area. CHYR was Cheer Radio from Leamington, Ontario, and they were a top 40 before. They were the Canadian station before CKLW was popular.
Yeah.
Everybody that I knew, if they, especially on Sundays, because there was no rock and roll on Sunday in Detroit until noon or 1 p.m. And but everybody tuned into Cheer Radio.
Interesting.
And sometimes after midnight. And Cheer Radio was 24 hours, top 40.
The thing about Cheer that I remember was it was like 7:10 in the day and 7:30 at night. They were on two different frequencies.
Yes, exactly.
And that was very strange. But now that's interesting that while American stations were doing God Squad, you know, the paid religion and the Sunday morning junk, here's a Cheer not doing that. I wonder if they were not doing it because maybe the Canadian authorities didn't kind of frowned on paid religion. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember 6 o'clock they had the news, 6:05 was a farm report, and 6:10 started music.
Yeah.
You know, in the morning, because I had a morning paper route.
Perfect.
And my transistor radio waiting for it.
Yeah. So I wonder when they went to top 40.
I would say this. I started listening to them probably about 1961.
Okay. All right.
62.
And when did they... you know, I know that they were like 67 and all that. They were definitely top 40, but you think it was early as 61, 62. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think it was 67 is when they picked up the Cheer call letters. Remember, they used to be CJSP?
Yeah, they picked up Cheer Radio from the Sun Parlor of Southeastern Ontario, I think they called it.
Yeah.
The Sun Parlor.
All right, and probably by the early 70s, that was it for them?
Yeah, I don't, I can't remember when they left, but somebody else came on 710, and I can't remember what it was. I think it was classical or talk.
Interesting.
I'm not sure.
So they broke up they broke up the 710, 730.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. I love it. Yeah, well, they would be a factor. I doubt they were much of a market factor, but they were certainly a factor for kids looking for Sunday morning top 40.
Well, they haven't had a market then.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's see, what else? There's another station on 560. It became an oldie station.
Okay.
560.
Who was it licensed? Do you remember the city of license?
Monroe.
Okay. All right. All right.
It became Honey Radio.
Yeah, oh, God, and, yes. Okay. All right. All right.
Absolutely. Before Honey Radio, it was a mixture of top 40 and country.
Right.
And I'm not sure what you would define it, but that was a station. And then we had WTAC 600 from Flint.
Wow, okay. Which, of course, was huge in Flint, but I didn't realize it had too much of a Detroit presence.
Yeah, it came into Detroit, and that's another station that played Sunday morning music.
Okay.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Honey very well. I think they swapped to that in 74, and it was kind of an oldies approach.
Right.
Which did well for them. All right.
Yep.
Well, good. Good. Then I think we are up to date, unless there was anybody else coming in that was big.
Well, in the 50s, 56, 57, WJLB had, I don't know if they were top 40 then. I don't think top 40 started till after Paola, is that right?
No, top 40 started before Paola. I would say mid 50s. What happened after the Paola hearings was they standardized it where they had a music director who would tell the jocks what they were going to play. And of course, at the time we were laughing saying, "Oh good, now you only have to pay off one person instead of seven." But the format was absolutely there from, I'd say, 55 on, Todd Storrs and Gordon McClendon and all that. Yeah, so absolutely before the hearings. There were a number of changes before the hearings, things like Balaban and the Star Stations, Don Burden and all that. So, yeah, it was around. But, JLB, so you think they might have been, in the 50s, almost a real top 40 approach.
Frantic Ernie Durham was our... Oh, he was our kind of huggy boy.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
He was a rhythmic cadence in his delivery.
Yes.
And would rhyme all his sentences.
Yes, and he was definitely mid-50s, no doubt about it. And
he did two shows. He did one in Flint, and I can't remember the call letters of that station. Then he came down to WJLB.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
But they were both owned by
don't
JLB.
Go away. Stay right where you are. And we will pick it up right there, right after this on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and if it was 1955 in Detroit, you heard that on the radio, you knew it was time for, Frantic Ernie Freeman. What am I saying? Anyway, Durham. Yes, absolutely. And it was in talking with Stan in Dearborn about that. And by the way, if you were in New York in the early 60s, it meant it was time for BMR, B. Mitchell Reed, on WMCA, same theme song. But interestingly, in those mid-50s years, the station was owned with, I think, a station in Flint, Booth Broadcasting, and I think Ernie was on both of them.
Right. Yeah, he was at both stations.
Yeah.
Did one in the afternoon, did one in the evening.
Right, BBC and Flint. Yeah, all right. Well, and good stuff. Absolutely good stuff.
I found the 560 is WQTE.
Okay.
And I've got a survey here from them from, October 3rd, I think it says, 1960.
Uh-huh.
And here's some of the records on here. Mary by Willie Jones, who is one of the... Royal Jokers.
Okay.
Lover by Shirley Taylor and singing Sammy Ward.
Okay.
Take All of Me, Billy Kent and the Adantes. That's a real hard record to get. And then they have go down to Hello My Lover, Ernie K. Doe.
Nice.
And Blue Heartaches by Tommy Edwards, Buzz, uh-huh. Buzz, Buzz, Frankie Lyman.
Whoa.
And then You Don't Want My Love by Roger Miller.
Uh-huh.
True Love Can Be, Ron Holden. Sure, I Love You, Roscoe Gordon. And Come Back, Silly Girl, Steve Lawrence. So they were all over the board.
Absolutely. Now that you mentioned QTE, wasn't Tom Clay on there for a while?
I think so.
Yeah.
And then he was on WJBK.
Right.
He went to, and I think they fired him in the Paola thing.
Yes.
And he went to CKLW, but then he came back to... CHB.
Yeah, at JBK, he was a Jack the Bellboy for a while.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And when I said that was my go-to station,
mm-hmm.
There's another Jack the Bellboy, was Dave Schaefer.
Yes, absolutely.
He was a customer on my paper route.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so was So it was Joe Reynolds, I think it was.
Joey Reynolds?
Director at WJR.
Oh, okay. No,
he was one of my customers.
Wow. All right.
My paper out. So,
fun stuff.
I knew them. And WJBK, I liked because on their survey, I've got a couple of their surveys here. In fact, I've got the whole year of 1963 somewhere, but I can't find it. And, they've got the Hot 15, the Up and Coming 15, and on the bottom, they've got another. It goes down to, like, record number 66, and then they've got 1, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, about 12 new records listed there. So they had about 100 records on there.
Well, yes, but whether they actually played them all is another story. Those surveys were notorious.
Yeah, but, well, I've got these things marked here. I've got Deep Freeze by the Adorables.
No, absolutely. If anybody was going to play it, I would think that would be it. But, you know, the surveys in general, you kind of have to. It's like Wibbage in Philadelphia always had, since they were 990 on the dial, a 99 record playlist. I remember a friend of mine called, did they really? I said, no, of course they didn't. But,
they had, like, Thursday night was dedication night, Thursday night was oldies night, Friday night was dedication night.
Yeah.
And they played, more than that, what their top 40 was.
Yes.
And, of course, that was Dave Schaefer was doing that when he was Jack the Bellboy.
Right.
And I thought he was bringing his own records in there. And but when you go look at K&R, I've got some of their music guys. They got the 13 in bold, and then it goes down to 31, and that was it.
Right.
And you heard these records every hour.
Well, that was Mike Joseph. That was typical Mike Joseph, of course. That's the way it was. Yeah, yeah.
So that's what turned me off about them. They had limited quantity, and they just played it over and over and over.
Right.
It was monotonous.
Yeah.
But
good stuff. Good memories. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. So I hope that enlightens Gary.
Yeah, if Gary has any other questions, he can call. we'll field them. But I think we've probably covered the landscape.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
I'd say we had, yeah.
Well, thanks for taking time out. I appreciate you calling.
Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Always.
And I'm glad to help.
Thanks.
I hope that helps Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I used to do market profiles, and I mentioned this before. It's probably my only regret in life, if I have any one regret, and that's that I didn't keep doing them, and I didn't do that many of them. I think I did like 10 or 11. But the history will be gone. So when somebody asks, I try to do my best to fill in some blanks while we're still around to do that. Now, some of the stuff will be online, I'm sure, and that's the other thing. A lot of broadcast museums locally, even individual stations with retrospective pages and... Usually right. I say usually because, of course, very often they're listener driven and memories are not exact. But what's really neat is when you have air checks of it as well. So we'll move directly on to something completely else. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. 888-876-5593, and we'll be getting to Cindy from Chicago. She's got a request, and I've got several requests we're going to play tonight too. Now, since we're talking radio, I'm going to talk about the C-Crane Company. Right now, the CC Pocket. Yeah, my purse would be lonely without it. It is one of the most popular pocket radios on the market, and it is a terrific little radio. It's really the perfect go-to everyday radio to keep in your purse if you're a gal, or in your pocket if you're a guy. And I'll tell you what, like all the radios that Bob Crane has developed, it's got incredible reception, AM and FM, and unbeatable for a radio of its size and crisp, clear audio. But not only that, usually very small radios that you can, put in your pocket are not going to have much in the ways of, digital or whatever. And you get all that. You get 5 memory preset buttons and, and you also, it's kind of a good emergency radio because you get the weather band and the weather alert as well. It's got a lighted dial, which is nice, and the time, of course, and all that. Very lightweight, very durable. Easy to hold. It's got rubber sides and a pocket clip. But best of all, it's got killer reception. So if you're looking for an everyday radio that you can carry with you, the CC Pocket is an ideal choice. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com, and take a look at the CC Pocket radio. But if you can't go online, they've got terrific customer service. Give them a call, 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. They'll answer all your questions. And, of course, if you want to order by phone, you can do that too. But if you want to see it, And this catalog is a wonderful repository, not only great products, yeah, you'll want some stuff, I guarantee you, but great information about radio, too. So look at that CC Pocket Radio at ccradio.com, and you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
While I'm young, I'm gonna break a few hearts. While I'm young, I'm gonna make some brand new stars. Well, I know I don't know everything, but I'm gonna chase my every dream. I'm gonna live, I'm gonna love. I'm gonna save up my cash, travel every land and sea. I'll have 195 lovers and 50 mermaids for me. I may not see everything, but I'm gonna chase my every dream. I'm gonna live, I'm gonna love.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, D.K. Harrell. Yeah, it was last night during Monday Night Trivia that Barry from New Hampshire said, I want to hear While I'm Young, D.K. Harrell, 2023 on the Little Village label, and the album was The Right Man. All right, so 888-876-5593, and we have Cindy in Chicago. What's up tonight, Cindy?
Well, I had a request. I don't know if you would play it. I don't know.
I got to hear it first. What is it?
Okay, Dream a Little Dream of Me.
Oh, all right, maybe. All right.
All right, and then I wanted to tell everyone about the sale at Jerry's, but I guess...
The what?
Sale at Jerry's wholesale store.
Uh-huh.
But it's, I guess there's a new sale tomorrow. I got a big bag of peaches, a pint of blackberries, and a cantaloupe. And I swear, I thought it would be like $9, $10. I didn't even pay $3.
How about that?
So I was real happy about that. You know, Mike told me to get on my broom and go over there.
Well, that's a nice way to phrase it, all right.
So I went and got on my witch's broom and flew over there and got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, he didn't talk about it. See if you play the song.
Well, maybe. Okay. Yes, Mama Cass, good old Dream, a Little Dream of Me. I might. I'll put it not at the top of the list. Let's just say that. But yes, maybe this week you will hear it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. I was just looking for an article that I thought I had set aside to talk about, and because it shocked the heck out of me, but I guess I didn't. And it was some guy who bought a house in the Hollywood Hills, you know, multi-million-dollar house, and suddenly had a $3.7 million bill from the city. Turns out that it was an old house that he bought it fairly recently, but, of course, the deed that came with it, who the hell reads every word of the deed, right? But it said that the homeowner was responsible for certain infrastructure things. And I don't remember what it was, but next thing you know, he gets a bill for $3.7 million from the city, and it turns out it's legal. So I didn't find it. Maybe you will. But here's the word of warning. If you're buying a house or what have you, make sure you or someone reads every word of the associated deeds, because even though you never signed it, you never saw it, you're still liable for it if you become the owner. So that was interesting to me anyway. I'd never heard of it. Now, we all know Route 66 is the mother road. So what's the father road? Do you know there was one, actually? Yeah, and it was interesting that the Lincoln Highway has a strong claim for being the father road. It opened in 1913, and of course Route 66 didn't officially begin until like 13 years later, 1926. So what we know about the father road, if you will, or any of these roads, is the idea of a cross-country roadway began with Carl Fisher. And if you're a Floridian, that's not an unfamiliar name to you. He was a businessman and entrepreneur, and he developed a lot of stuff. And of course, also believed the automobile would completely change American life. Yes, body by Fisher. He understood that cars would never reach their full potential if there wasn't anything to drive them on. And so, you know, the mud, the ruts and all that, the disconnected roads. And it is hard to believe that even 100 years ago, America really wasn't fully connected. But Fisher back then envisioned a durable, improved road going from New York City to San Francisco. I think he called it the Coast-to-Coast Rock Highway. And, of course, he was well known. He had created the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and, of course, as I mentioned, transformed Miami Beach into a famous resort destination, which is why there's Fisher Island and all that kind of stuff. But the Lincoln Highway was perhaps his boldest project in 1912. You look at it then, there were virtually no roads. There were no interconnected roads outside of cities and towns. Highways were dirt and sometimes impassable if it had rained. And cross-country travel still at that point fully dominated by railroads. So what he did was he went around to all the big names in the automobile industry, which made sense, don't you think, because they want to sell cars. And so it was the guy from Packard and the guy from Goodyear and all that who formed the Lincoln Highway Association in 1913. And their mission was obviously simple. Let's get a road across the country from the Atlantic to the Pacific and, you know, sell a lot of cars, a lot of tires, a lot of things. And so, of course, they had a lot of money, but still funding it was not going to be easy. And so they got some people who could help along the way, from Teddy Roosevelt and Thomas Edison to Woodrow Wilson, who was president at the time, of course. Henry Ford refused to contribute. He believes that roads should be publicly funded rather than privately. And yeah, all right, well, good for you. Except bottom line is there wasn't going to probably be a road without this. Though the association never raised enough money to fully build it itself. However, what happened with this is that in the process, Americans were convinced that we needed a road, that this mattered. And so, you know, there were some who, you know, felt it was seeding what would come with the highways. And what the Lincoln Highway Association did was they had miles of it, just not necessarily connected, short stretches of concrete in rural areas to demonstrate how much better paved roads would be. And obviously, once people experienced the difference, they agreed. And so pressure started to grow, and the federal government had to invest in better highways. So that was the Lincoln Highway that paved the way for a road trip, and that would be known as the Father Road, loosely. I don't know that it ever got any full definition, but that's the deal. So 888-876-5593. I've got another 2 hours of absolutely useless information. So if it's on your mind, by all means, let's discuss it. So I'm looking at other things that might be of interest. Yeah, here was an interesting question. Is it possible to trademark a smell? And I thought to myself, well, the flavor houses, I think, trademark a taste, so why not? And I actually didn't bother to get to the bottom of that to find out whether that was true or not. But at this time with AI and everything else, there's going to be a lot of legal questions that are not yet set in stone that are going to come to pass. So we'll see what else we got. And this being, of course, the 26th of May. And Peggy Lee would have been 106. Born in 1920 in Jamestown, North Dakota. Yeah. Oscar Tony Jr., 87. Miles Davis would have been 100 today. Yeah, born in Alton, Illinois. Grew up in East St. Louis. And, 100 years old, right? It was on this date in 1960 that Bobby V was on American Bandstand singing something you've never heard in your life, unless you were watching. What Do You Want was the song that he lip-synced on American Bandstand. I plead total ignorance to what that even might be. In 1965, TV Shindig. You remember Shindig and Hullabaloo? Well, Shindig had the Rolling Stones. And they did The Last Time, which, of course, you know well. Play With Fire, maybe not so well. And their new debut single, yes, Satisfaction. And Sonny and Cher were on it, and Jackie D. Shannon was on it, and Jimmy Rogers as well. On this date in 1966, Marvin Gaye was in Los Angeles at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And the Righteous Brothers, same date, were on TV with Where the Action Is. Meanwhile, a year later, Neil Diamond made his first Cleveland appearance. Who would care? At Chippewa Lake Park, amusement park. Yeah. 1968, Ed Sullivan hosted Spanky and Our Gang. Yeah. Doing songs again that you've never heard, which I always find interesting when that happens, but that's the case. On this date in 1979, seems like it was just yesterday, Saturday Night Live, Bette Midler, again. Yeah, doing things you probably aren't, with which you aren't terribly familiar. But it was on this date in 1956 that the Four Lovers cracked the national charts with "You're the Apple of My Eye." And it was Otis Blackwell that wrote that. And, of course, the Four Lovers became the Four Seasons down the road. And actually, that's what caused me to come up with my theme for last night. All the same groups that were the Hollywood Flames, because what I was going for originally was hit groups who started with other names. And as I was doing that, when I came across the fourth one that was the Hollywood Flames, I thought to myself, the hell with other groups, let's just do it all with the Hollywood Flames. And we did. Oh, after the news, we're going to talk to Johnny in Austin. That's always a lot of fun. Oh, what is that? I don't even know. All right, yeah. Now my equipment is talking to me. Oh well, yeah. I'm sure there's a hidden message there somewhere, and we'll find it, and we'll find the rest of your requests as well, and your calls. So it's a slow night, it turns out. Yeah, maybe you just weren't interested in Detroit radio. I don't know. Cilla Black would have turned 83 this week. Yeah, tomorrow actually, and sadly she left us at 73. Had a stroke. But, Cilla Black, whose actual name I think was Cilla White, and from Liverpool, of course, that was the magic ticket when you're talking about the mid-60s. And, yes, you're my world. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up next hour right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Jackie DeShannon wrote it. In this case, the Searchers sang it, 1964 on Cap. The Searchers had been together since 1959, and they had the good fortune of being from Liverpool, because in 1964, that's all it took to get a record contract, and indeed they did. Although some of their stuff I really like, not necessarily this, but some of it. Bob from Willowbrook requested it, and I was happy to play it. But Bob, you also requested the Renegades. I wrote that down, but I didn't write which song by the Renegades you wanted. So let us know what that is, and we'll see if we can get that as well. So, 888-876-5593. We got Johnny in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, good evening from a stormy night in Austin, Texas.
Oh, that's interesting. So, rain in the forecast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it'll
Fran and Fran and me want to run for cover when that lightning and all that noise comes and the thunder and all that.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. All right, so we're talking radio. So as far as I know, and you'll correct me because you are the absolute authority on Houston radio, Paul Berlin, who came there from Memphis in 1960.
1950.
Oh, right, 1950. I'm sorry, 1950, yes. He was the first person to, and he was, 19 years old? He was the first person to play rock and roll, KNUZ, I think. Was there anybody doing that before him?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, because I didn't meet him until 57.
Okay, and he was...
I'm trying to think. I'm not even sure I listened to much radio before him, but I'm sure I did.
Well, it was interesting, because when he got there in 1950, you know, it was the height of pop standards and all that, and I always give credit to the guys who were able to go from that into rock and roll and not lose credibility, and he certainly was one of them. But by 57, when you met him, that's about the time that Kilt debuted as full-time top 40, and it was K-News and Kilt, of course. In the 60s, was there ever any other AM Top 40 competitor who mattered between KNUZ and Kilt?
Well, it was an interesting period of time back there in the 19... Well, you're talking about the 60s?
Yes.
Because in the late 50s...
Okay, I'll take the late 50s.
Okay. You had a couple of stations who were trying to find their way. So...
Like all, by the way, KILT. Like all of them, okay?
Yeah,
you know,
and KILT was the big dog,
right?
You know, with a lot of power,
right?
And KNUZ on 1230,
yeah,
had a local signal, but the city had not grown out to the suburbs yet.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, they covered the inner city, all right?
Right.
And you know, at first, you know, I don't remember the year, but at first, 1230 being a local frequency was only 250 watts.
Oh, sure, 1,000 day, 250 night, like all of them, the class.
Well,
4
no,
stations.
No. Even in the daytime, they were 250.
Oh, really?
Watts.
Well, you know,
yes.
That 250 in the day probably covered everything they needed to cover back then.
Well, it was sad that when I had to go to Galveston because they didn't make it.
Yeah, no, that would be a problem. But as far as as far as Harris County, not the entire county, mind you, but basically Central Houston. Now, but that begs a good question, because of course some people recall that they would listen to XERF or even to Coma. Do you remember the nighttime signals or the WNOEs of the world coming into the point where it mattered in Houston?
Oh, at night, sure.
So
at night,
so
you know, you had a bit, you know, I don't have to tell you about 1510 WLAC.
Well, of course.
John R. Yeah. Way down south in Dixie.
Right, right. White Rose Petroleum Jelly, 101 uses, and you know what that one is for.
Yeah. So I did a lot of listening to WLAC.
Yeah.
And then KOMA.
Right.
They really caught my attention back about, I'm guessing, 64.
Okay.
We used to get WKY out of Oklahoma City pretty well, too. And what were they, 930?
Yeah, KY, of course, absolutely owned the market. Coma had that great reach, and so people all across the South and Midwest would talk about listening to Coma. But the reality is Coma could never beat KY locally.
I know that. I've heard you say that many times.
Actually, Todd actually thought about going country. Other people were recommending it because in Oklahoma City he just couldn't get a stronghold. And it was ironic because at night, to a lot of people, Como was like the station. So, yeah.
And I'm going to get back to your question here in just a second, but wasn't there a time that these local stations like 1230s and the 1490s and the 1450s and all those locals, weren't they originally all 250 watts before they got that 1,000 watt day 250 nights?
No, they were.
I think K-News was the Lone Ranger on that.
It might not have been a Lone Ranger, but I'm pretty sure that they were able to do, in most cases, 1,000 day 250 night non-directional. But while you are doing this, I got a way to find out.
When they got that 1,000-watt days, that was great.
Oh, yeah.
You could get them in Galveston then.
Well, I got a way to do this.
I do believe, though, and I can't recall the year. There's probably some engineering people out there that would know that much better than I do, but you got the resources to look it up.
Yeah, well, what I was trying to do here is pull, like in 1957, which would be the year 56, actually, broadcasting yearbook, and see what do I have for, because usually they'll give you all the frequencies, and let's see what we've got on there.
What were those locals? 1230, 1240, 1340?
I think that was original, but let me not do 57. That's a bad year for these broadcasting yearbooks. I remembered that now. All right.
I think they didn't get that 1,000 watts till about closer to late 59 or 60.
Well, that may be. That's true in Houston, but I'm pretty sure that the Class 4s could absolutely have that, basically across the country. So why am I not picking this up? All right.
And then what was interesting, sometime in the 70s, they got that 1,000-watt nights as well, which I don't think made any difference to anybody. They were still all jumbled up.
Yeah, 1,000 watts day and night. Yes, that's absolutely absolutely true. All right, by frequencies. A469. Are they kidding me with that? All right, well, let's see. All right, let's turn to A469 and get to 1230, and this would be basically the year of 1957, and find out what we had. Oh, we got the Canadian AMs. That's nice. I'd rather have ours, thank you.
While you're looking on that, I'll go ahead and tell you these other stations.
Yeah, please do.
Their way.
Please do.
So you had KILT, the Big 610, 5,000 watts.
Right.
And they came along. I think they debuted, in about 55, 56, I'm guessing?
57, Gordon did it. Oh, yeah, 57.
I should know.
Yeah,
but it was a big deal because before that there were KLBS,
right, Liberty, and the play-by-play recreations of baseball and all that. No, at 57, he knew what he had with Cliff and decided that he would do Kilt. So yeah,
that was a smart move.
Yeah,
I remember. I think when they debuted, they played Hound Dog over and over for a long time.
Yeah,
I think
right. Usually, most of the stations would. You know, kind of spoof like that.
Yeah, so look at us. Hear this. You know, and everybody was scrambling around. But the stations that were really trying to find their way was a 1320 KXYZ.
Oh, God, yes.
Which I visited. It was around the corner from my dentist's office in the Gulf Building in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And so I went to my dentist, and I asked my mom, can we go see that radio station? And she said, sure.
Right.
We went out, and oh, gosh, man, it's lightning here.
Good. That's nice.
I've got to be careful when you get shocked like that. You never know what's going to come out of your mouth. Anyway, let me recompose here. So KXYZ was in the Gulf Building with my dentist office. And so we went in there, and in 1958, Chuck Dunaway happened to be the jock on the air, and I think he was about middays. Mm-hmm. So that's where I met Chuck Dunaway the very first time. So at that point, KXYZ 1320 was playing. I've got some of their old surveys up here. If I would have known you were going to ask me that, I would have brought them down. But, you know, they were trying to get in the game, too, but carefully.
Right.
You know, I mean.
Right. As only ABC could. And, of course, they had done that with.
Well, I don't think. It wasn't ABC yet.
I thought it was with those call letters.
No. It was locally owned by, well, it was managed by somebody named Les Kamen, but I. Oh, who in the heck?
Really?
Owned it?
I thought those. I thought those call letters signaled it was.
No, no, it was always KXYZ. Well, maybe it wasn't always KXYZ, but I know it was way back in the.
You know what's? 50. You know what's so embarrassing? I did a market study on the market. I wrote all about this, and I don't remember any of it. Oh my God!
Well, I've still got your book on.
Oh, geez. Okay, well. It's probably in there.
It might have been Glenn McCarthy that owned that station at that time.
Oh, really?
The guy who owned the Shamrock and everything?
Yeah.
The big oil guy? But at any rate, so, you know, yeah, they played the Platters, and that they probably were a little bit more conservative in their playing of rock and roll or R&B, I'm guessing.
Right.
KXYZ. And then you had another little lost property owned by Roy Hoffines.
Right.
He was a mayor of Houston for a time, and he owned a station on 790. I don't want you to get lost here. Mm-hmm. It used to be on 1230 called KTHT.
Right.
So KTHT.
Keep talking, Houston, Texas. Yeah,
at 790 on your AM dial,
which became KULF.
KTHT had vacated 1230.
Right, right.
Which became KNUZ, so that was in the 50s sometime.
Right.
But when Roy Hoffines owned KTHT 790, they were another one that were trying to find their way. And that station over the years had won a heck of a time finding any identity, even when they changed to KULF. In 1970 or 71. And they too, you know, KTHT was kind of in the scramble with KXYZ trying to find their niche with Kilt and or their competitive edge with Kilt and KNUZ. But neither one were very successful at it. And they were always flipping. I remember vividly back in 1966, and this was all over the news on the other stations, KXYZ 1320, again, 1966, Houston, Texas, fired their whole staff.
Nice.
All gone. And I think that's when this general manager, Lester Kamen, was there, and that was probably the time they went Beautiful Music.
Okay.
I would bet you. And they tried to be the KABL, which was San Francisco of Houston.
You're right, cable, right.
They tried to do that. And they stayed Beautiful Music for years. Even after ABC acquired it.
Yep.
So, you had a couple of stations trying to mess with the Kilt and KNUZ with no success. It was a two-way deal in terms of rock and roll top 40 radio. And then, of course, on the R&B side, you had daytimer 1430 KCOH,
right,
which did pretty well. They had they were locally owned by a man named Robert Meeker, who was a friend of my dad's. First soul radio station I ever went and visited, which was one of my favorite radio stations, so I got to meet all the jocks there. And then, of course, you had 24-hour KYOK, which came along later in the game. They were originally called Cattle, KATL.
Okay.
And when Stanley Ray and Jules Paglin out of New Orleans bought KYOK, or bought Cattle, they flipped it to KYOK, and we had Soul Station number 2.
Right.
So those were your prominent and then you had your MOR station, which was KPRC.
Right.
Which did quite well. They were affiliated with Channel 2, KPRC TV. So those were your pretty dominant stations at that time. Did I answer that question
Absolutely. So there was nobody who really tried it for any length of time to where it would have mattered.
No, okay. And you make me wonder now if somebody could have jumped in there and scrambled it up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, that 1590, it was KATL and then KYOK. And of course, 1430 was always KCOH. So
Cattle was an interesting station. I bought one of their brochures on eBay. It went back to, I think, 1947. Very interesting. They had a lot of people over there, and they started out at 1,000 watts on 1590 when they were kind of country, block format. They were affiliated with the Houston Press newspaper for their news.
Right.
And they gave it a good try. But a lot of if you weren't in Houston, you probably won't know this guy, Marvin Zindler.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Marvin Zindler got famous for busting up this place in LaGrange, Texas. You know, for the movie came from.
Interesting.
Remember?
Yes.
The Dolly Parton.
Right.
So Marvin Zindler was actually part of KATL Cattle Radio. And then by the 70s, Marvin Zindler was brilliant. This guy became a consumer TV advocate for Channel 13.
Right, the investigative legend. Yes, I know about that. Yeah.
But when he was at Cattle Radio on Sunday nights, he did a taped program called The Roving Mike.
Yeah.
And Marvin Zindler during the week would chase the police around with a recorder and go to stabbings and shootings and car accidents and interview people and play them back on Sunday nights. And actually, I have some of those, the tapes of him. And that was from the KATL in the 50s.
But yeah, that thing I think it was the early 70s, the Chicken Ranch was what...
thank you. I guess you can say the name of the movie now on the radio. I don't know.
It was Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, but...
Yeah.
But it was Broadway musical before it was even a movie, I think.
But it was due to Marvin Zindler, who... That's where the song LaGrange came from, by ZZ Top. Yeah.
Well, that thing had started, that brothel, in 1905. So it was...
I'm surprised that they didn't... trying to find a way to say this, but I'm surprised they didn't do any damage to Marvin Zindler for what he did, because even back in the 40s, did you read that story about this reporter in Alice, Texas, at that little station on 1070?
Yeah. Hang on a minute.
Was Bill...
We will pick it up right there, right after the news, right here on WGN Radio.
Thank you.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and those are the Moments, 1970 on Stang, which was one of Sylvia Robinson's early labels. So we're talking to Johnny in Austin, and having a good time reminiscing AM Top 40 Radio in Houston. So 1958, May of 58, is when the FCC allowed stations on Class 4 frequencies, as they used to call them, to be 1,000 watts in the day. Now, not many of them did it for a few years, because, you know, it meant changing transmitters and all that, but 58 was when they could do it in the day, and then it was probably 85, 86 when they could do it at night. All right, so now that we've settled that.
Yeah, just to, for your listeners who just tuned in, it always drives me crazy to turn on a radio show and here, what are you talking about? So just to recap for your listeners who just checked in, we were talking about this these old Houston stations, especially this old one called Cattle, KATL, on 1590, where this character, Marvin Zindler,
right,
who was really, I mean, how can I say this? He wasn't a real polished reporter, but...
Oh, but he dug the dirt better than anybody.
Oh, he did. You know, he's been gone for a while.
Yeah.
And my dad knew him, and he, you know, in the media, he was kind of a joke as being one of these sensational
right.
type reporters. What they call them? You know, they had a name for him. Like newspapers.
Well, like,
you know,
yeah, like yellow journalism, right? Exactly.
Exactly. And that's why he was doing that roving mic, and he'd go up to a stabbing, and the victim would be there, you know.
Yeah, right.
Clinging to life. Well, can you tell me what happened here, Joe? You know, and the guy,
I remember he had the Rat and Roach report, which was...
Oh, yeah. Well, see what happened. He went to work for the Harris County Sheriff's Department for a long time. This is Marvin Zindler now.
Yeah.
And actually... He was pretty nationally famous. He was actually on David Letterman's TV show one night. That's
right.
On YouTube, probably. Okay. But he knew how to market himself.
Yeah.
That was the key to Marvin Zindler's success. So he did the roving mic back in the 50s, and he worked for the sheriff's office.
Right.
And then KTRK TV, Channel 13 in Houston, where they were kind of struggling around trying to find themselves. And Marvin Zindler, along with Dave Ward, who used to be a KNUZ news person back in the 50s and 60s, they teamed up and started the Eyewitness News team in about 1972. And Marvin Zindler comes along and sells the management on what he could do for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, did he deliver. Yeah. Marvin Zindler... Eyewitness News.
Yeah.
And he was a consumer advocate, and people loved him. And he was a superstar.
Yeah.
And then he busted up that
chicken ranch
in LaGrange, Texas.
Right.
And that really brought him some fame there. That really put him on the map.
Oh, sure.
And it had been going on so long, and there was so much corruption and stuff. I'm surprised that somebody didn't mess with him over that.
Well, right, because you were thinking about Bill Mason, which was long before that, the Alice, Texas story. And
the Alice, Texas story, wasn't that? That was
the 40s, the late 40s. And,
but, man, what an interesting story that was.
Right, it was. And, of course, this is also near the area where, you know, the funny stuff about LBJ and 48 and the ballots and all that kind of stuff. But he was killed Bill Mason, by a sheriff's deputy, Sam Smith.
I know.
Yeah, Sam Smithwick, I think, was the guy's name. And
this Bill Mason came to Alice, Texas, from somewhere up north. I can't remember where he came.
Yeah,
from.
Absolutely. He was from Minneapolis originally. And,
okay.
You know,
well, you might know more about this story than I do, but it was really bizarre for the day. Well, maybe not in a little town like
right,
that.
Right. No, he had gone to California. He was in Oakland for a while, and he was working for Earl Warren. Well, that's a familiar name. Hello, Supreme Court. But at the time, District Attorney for Alameda County. And then he went to Detroit. Now, this is the 30s. And the only reason I'm aware of this guy is because I had really investigated what happened to those missing ballots, which is a different story that we'll keep off the air. But anyway, he went to Akron. And he was doing PR for General Tire and Rubber, and that's how he got to Texas, because apparently they were opening plants in like Baytown and Waco and places like that, and he was the guy who did the marketing campaigns for that. Texas goes to war, you know. This, of course, during World War II. And they was in Mexico City for a while and, you know, had something to do with the president of Mexico and all that. But from there, he went to San Antonio trying to find work. Didn't he move to Alice and was managing editor of the Alice Echo. And then he became PD of KBKI. And that's where that show, Bill Mason Speaks, came about. Well, Bill Mason spoke all right. And that's where, you know, he found out that Sam Smithwick, you know, who worked for the sheriff's department, owned a bar that was a front for gambling and prostitution. And so he did this on the air and a whole big expose of that. And the next day, of course, Smithwick killed him, is what happened. And, you know, there was a trial, a big trial and all that in Jim Wells County. And ultimately, Smithwick was convicted and he committed suicide in prison a couple of years later.
What year did this happen? I read it all.
Yeah, it would have been 49. He would have been in prison. He would have killed himself in 52. But see, all this ties into why I was investigating this again, because the way that Coke Stevenson lost the election because of those Precinct 13 polling box, the stolen Precinct 13 box, you know, which I won't say on the air what happened, but I know what happened. But in any event, the bottom line is that Smithwick had called while he was in prison, had called the governor, Coke Stevenson, and then wrote letters. You know, I guess obviously the governor doesn't take the prisoner's phone call, but does take the letters. And he alleged that he knew the whereabouts of Precinct 13's polling box, which is what Stevenson knew cost him the 48 election. And Lyndon B. Johnson won that by 87 votes. And so Stevenson, you know, in fact, Stevenson came out and said the position was stolen from me. And at that point, he claimed that he's been vindicated, you know, because of this letter. Well, anyway, next thing you know is that Smithwick commits suicide.
So this Bill Mason exposed all this as a news reporter on the little radio station in Alice, Texas?
No, Bill Mason did not expose the Precinct 13 ballot box. He exposed Sam Smithwick, who was, you know, a sheriff's deputy. And he exposed that Sam owned Rancho Alegro, which was gambling and prostitution. And so that's where a day after he proclaimed on his radio that he's taking the gloves off and, you know, tell you all about the operation and all that. Deputy Smithwick's property every night has the world's oldest profession, you know, plying its trade and on, you know. All right. So anyway, he says, I know Sam Smithwick knows what is going on. He's out there all the time at night. Well, the next day, Smithwick kills him. It was a car. And there were witnesses, and there were different stories on that came out in trial. But anyway, the bottom line was that, Smithwick's car was in one direction and Bill Mason's was in the other, and he stopped Bill Mason, said, I'd like to talk to you, and anyway, tells the passenger to get out of the car and then just shoots him in cold blood. And so that's what happened. And he died. obviously. And so they did the investigation. They had a big trial. And like I say, after the trial, when he was guilty, Smithwick was, you know, trying to get out of prison, trying to get clemency, whatever. He's writing to the governor, who lost the election by 87 votes, saying, I know where the stolen Precinct 13 polling box is. You see, so that's how that came up to it.
Did you were you familiar with the story? Because I'm discovered,
like this. I say, I'm only familiar with the story because I wanted to know about that polling box, and and I could tell you who and what, but I like breathing. Yeah. But when I was getting to the bottom of that, that's when I found out about Bill Mason. And
but who would have thought? I mean, back in the 1949, that some little radio station in some tiny town would get killed over.
Well, that's where I would story. No, that's where I would expect it, because these are the places where, you know, under the radar, business as usual forever. And you know, here comes somebody raining on their parade. I mean, it's little when you look at the market, because you're thinking of radio markets. It's not little to this deputy. It's his life, you know, and he'd been getting away with this for seemingly forever. And here comes this guy raining on his parade. Well, we have to do him in.
And what were the because that station turned into a station called KOPY, but right. What were their original call letters in
KBKI.
Dallas, Texas?
Yeah, KBKI. But it doesn't, you know, like I say, that doesn't matter. It's it was the story about Sam Smithwick. But no, it was not unusual in the 40s. Hell, it wasn't unusual in the 60s or 70s in small towns to still have brothels. I've got radio stations in Miami and Globe. And I'll tell you what, Miami had a brothel until the 70s. And they did themselves in. They actually took out an ad in the Yellow Pages. And
oh,
I kid you not.
Under what?
I don't remember, but yeah, basically that they explained what they were going to do, and then they had to be shut down. But chances are good they would still not be shut down. And when you drive from Phoenix to Globe, you pass an area called Top of the World. And Top of the World is interesting because there's virtually nothing there. I mean, there's no gas station. There's no nothing. It's got some homes and stuff like that, and it's got a beef jerky stand. But that's really about it. And so I was curious, saying, what's the history of Top of the World? You know, because I thought, there's got to be a reason, you know. Well, it turns out that Top of the World was where they had the brothels for the mine workers. And it was like a codified, sanctified place in all these different brothels. And
what years are we talking about?
Well, that would have been from that would have been probably from the 1890s through the 1940s.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, I mean, this was way back. Hang on a minute, don't go away. I'm going to do this and then be right back to it on WGN Radio. Gonna find her. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, the Coast is Searching, 1957, on ATCO, with the flip side being Youngblood, and it was Robert and LaGrange who requested the last two, and now he has heard them, and we're talking to Johnny and Austin, and so during that last commercial break, I decided, let's find out exactly when the last house of prostitution at Top of the World closed. Believe it or not, it was 1956.
19 what?
56.
Where was this?
This is between Phoenix and Globe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was telling about that. Yeah, apparently the because it used to be that was the only reason there was Top of the World. There were camps of prostitution for the minors. Well, in 1918, the state outlawed it. You know, couldn't have this anymore. Prostitution's illegal. Well, of course these brothels continued to pop up, and the last one was pretty infamous because the Arizona Republic exposed it, much like we were talking about in Alice, and the Gila County Sheriff's Office went in with padlocks and court orders and shut it down in 56. So,
well, when Marvin Zindler did this for Channel 13,
yeah,
he really made a name for himself, but I'm really surprised that he didn't get serious physical repercussions over that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty bold, and then it got famous, but it shut down. And this was in LaGrange, Texas, and you knew more about that infamous place than I ever did. Chicken Ranch.
The Chicken Ranch, yeah. And that name for houses of prostitution is not just there. You know, there's the famous Chicken Ranch in, where's that place that Art Bell lived? Can't think of it right now, in Nevada. Pahrump. There was a Chicken Ranch there too. So you know, it's not an unknown name for obvious reasons that we don't need to really get into here. But that was the deal. So yeah, the Chicken Ranch closed in 73. And but you know, the thing is that story, by the time it was out there, was not completely unknown. It wasn't really a shock. And Zindler did it with another journalist. There were two together who went on to report on that. And then, of course, Texas Monthly did big stories and all that.
So I guess he was pretty well, you know, he got his fame.
Yeah, always sure. Interested. He at some point before that, he became the consumer fraud guy.
Harris County Sheriff's Office.
Exactly. And he started that division, and it's still around. And so,
When he made it to TV, he took that Eyewitness News team at Channel 13 and used them to the top, where it stayed on top for a long time.
Well, sure. It was wonderful.
He was a personality.
Right.
And my father, you know, knew him, grew up with him. He said, "Oh, Marvin," and he'd mispronounce words, and he was really kind of sloppy. Really, I mean,
didn't matter.
It didn't matter. My father was in there watching one night. He said, "Oh, you stupid Marvin." I said, "Yeah, you laugh real hard about that, but he's making about 10 times more money than you are."
Exactly. And, you know, he got a lot of awards and things like that. Some of them were weird. He got an award from some plastic surgeons group for freely talking about his own cosmetic surgeries.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And, of course, he was a Freemason, so he was colorful, which is...
Actually, when I was doing that Sunday morning oldie show on KFMK in Houston, I had my little niece up there who was on the air co-hosting with me from time to time, and we went up to Channel 13 and met him.
Yeah.
And had him co-host one of our Sunday morning shows, and he was a character. It was the only time I ever met him.
Yeah, and sadly he's been gone. My God, it's about 20 years now.
Has it been that long?
I think it was probably like 06, 07 in there.
And he had an assistant there named Lori who was really good at what she did, and she kind of ran the whole thing for him because he needed, with all the people reaching out for help from him and the consumer.
And his funeral was a three-ring circus. If you remember, Joel Osteen spoke at it. And, I mean, obviously, Mr. Zindler was Jewish, and his service was at Beth Israel, I think, in Houston. But it didn't matter. There's Joel Osteen, and there's Reverend Bill, and there's Reverend Kirsten.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was a three-ring circus, and he's buried at Woodlawn. But, yeah, I'm sure. I bet you that's on. You know, I'd have to look, but I bet you that is online. Actually, from 2007. Yeah.
What year did he pass away?
I think it was like 2006 or 7 or 8, right in there. and it was pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, I knew that.
All right. Well, no, I'm going to, we've ended the hour. It's been a wonderful hour. And yes, so hang on a moment because I don't want to let you go without plugging Soul of the City, but we can't do that because of the news. So stay where you are. And then we will get to Cleveland, Denison, Eduardo, and Floyd, and there will be room for you too right after the news, right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Walk on the Wild Side. Jack wanted to hear that. He wanted to hear both versions after. Jack called and said, I want to hear Jimmy Smith and I want to hear Lou Reed. All right, both doing Walk on the Wild Side, not exactly the same song. The Jimmy Smith version, 1962, on Verve, and we'll get to Lou Reed next. And I've been hogging Johnny Goen for a whole hour here and haven't even yet talked about Soul of the City, what's coming up this Sunday night.
Well, so speaking of that, I'm going to throw another one in the mix. Could you at some time play Walk on the Wild Side by Brooke Benton?
Oh, you know, when I pulled the Jimmy Smith, I almost did. So I've got it actually on my desktop here, so I'll be happy to.
Yeah, I thought that was one of his good ones. I really did.
Okay, well, we'll do him then, and then we'll do Lou Reed after that. All right, I'll do it.
Okay. Hey, listen, well, while I'm at it, what Raleigh was talking about was the radio show I do on Sunday nights called Soul of the City. Actually, coming up on June 15th, it will have been a year since that thing has been on the Internet. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And I have had some very nice listeners of yours contact me, one by the name of Paul Sullivan, a gentleman named Stephen B., who... as an alumni of Carver High in South Chicago, where the Lovelights got together, the group that did...
Oh, how can you tell my mom and dad that I've been bad? Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. Stephen B., hi to you, and thank you so much. And Paul Sullivan, I don't know if any of these people ever call you. And then I got a very nice email and had a few conversations with a gentleman in Largo, Florida, who's a big listener of yours, except he listens back on the website because he goes to sleep when you come on.
Yep, and I'm delighted to put those replays up, but if ever you are awake, anybody, call. All right.
And this guy, he's a really nice guy. His name is Ron Gurley, and he's out of Largo, Florida.
Sure.
And when he wrote me, he said he was worked at the transmitter site of radio station WFUN in 65 and 66.
Oh, absolutely, in Sweetwater.
And he mentions many times the owner of that radio station.
Robert W. Rounsville.
How do you pronounce that name?
Robert W. Rounsville.
From what he told me, that owner was quite unique.
Well, yeah. He spoke with a speech impediment, so it was always Wabbit W. Wounsville. But anyway, he had quite a few soul stations. In fact, most of his stations were soul stations.
Well, he told me he had WYLD in New Orleans.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Roundsville had a lot of things. Absolutely. They were, that was a good deal. You know, that station came to, the frequency was created in 1960. And it there had been an 800 which moved, so the 790 was created, but it was licensed to South Miami. It had a ridiculous array directional, and it was, like I say, out there in Sweetwater, which is where we would have worked at the transmitter. But it never covered Broward County. So as long as Miami and Fort Lauderdale were separated markets, much like Dallas and Fort Worth and what happened there later, as long as they were separate, FUN could absolutely hold its own. And in the early 60s, their PD was great. Dick Starr, who had originally come from the Tampa area, but Dick was tremendous, I thought. And I loved it when they hired Mikey Harvey because, of course, he played beach music. Now, of course, WQAM loved this, too, because beach music wasn't necessarily mass appeal. But I thought it was just terrific. So anyway, that's what happened. But Roundsville had a number of soul stations. They're based in Atlanta.
Well, Ron was telling me all about it, and I didn't know anything about that ownership at all. Never heard of it before.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But Ron is a big listener of yours and has been for quite a while. He just catches your shows on the on your
site. Oh, that's
site.
Great. That's so nice. Yeah, Robert Roundsville's in the Georgia Radio Hall of Fame.
I never even heard this name before.
He was originally
telling me all these great stories.
Oh,
about
yeah.
This. Apparently the owner was a good guy.
Yeah, he was. The general manager, Blinky, what the heck was his name? There's a reason I call him that. But anyway, can't think of it right now. But in any event, yeah, and when they went to those, they were originally at the Blimp base in Miami Beach. And and then they went from there. They built a studio at 6101 Sunset Boulevard or Drive or whatever in South Miami. And it was beautiful because they had a mosaic on the side of the building of the Jester they had as their logo with WFUN. And, man, I cried when that went away. I was just like, oh.
Wow. Yeah. So you were? Did you live in that area?
Well, no. I lived in Bal Harbour, and I worked for QAM, which was not there. But certainly, you know, I knew folks at FUN. In fact, I still talk to Mike Harvey to this day.
Actually, Ron worked at the transmitter site in 65-66.
Right, that had been Sweetwater. I know, absolutely. Absolutely. My God, I just started itching. I can feel the mosquitoes now. But
yeah, well, we got our share of them here, too. At any rate, what Raleigh was talking about, the show I do, is on the Internet. It's on Sunday nights from 6 p.m. until 12 midnight, Sunday night, Central Time.
Yeah.
And it is classic soul and R&B and clips of some of the famous DJs across the country who did soul radio. And the music on The Soul of the City, the show I do, it includes artists like Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, Curtis Mayfield, The Impressions, you're starting to get it, Teddy Pendergrass,
yeah.
Sly and the Family Stone. Ooh, man, still lightning here. We do Jerry Butler, Otis Redding, Etta James, Staple Singers, Bobby Womack, a lot of that. Sam Cooke, you get the picture? Did that paint
a picture
for you?
Sounds great.
And so that's what we do on Sunday night, and you can access it by going to soulofthecity.net. There's no archives. You got to hear it live.
That's
if you
right.
want to hear it. And I think your listeners that haven't heard it, who love soul music, would enjoy it. soulofthecity.net or the flagship station where if you're a... Gary's over here laughing.
Yeah, HoustonRadioPlatinum.com.
HoustonRadioPlatinum.com.
If you have an aggregator and you try to find Soul of the City and it's like just not there, don't give up.
I don't
just
know how to say aggregator. I say alligator.
Well, all right, very good because after all, they are eating up signals right and left, so that's just fine. But yes, if you look for it in any of the aggregators and you don't see SoulOfTheCity.net, go ahead and look for Houston Radio Platinum because that is who is actually carrying the stream.
Oh, that's great. And the next time we talk, I'd like to talk about your knowledge of the, what's the artist's name? Oh, help me, Pittsburgh guy. Oh,
well, Porky Chadwick?
No. This was a singer. Donnie Elbert.
Oh, Donnie Elbert. Donnie Elbert. Absolutely. We could do a whole hour on Donnie Elbert. All right. All right, good deal. I get to play.
I need to know some of his best songs to play.
Oh, yeah, and the stuff, Have I Sinned? And, you know, so many, many things. And so I'll be happy to give you the whole Donnie Albert discography, and I won't even mention
Where Did Our Love Go. I want your listeners to know this. We've been on the phone a long time.
Yes.
But before I called, there was nobody calling.
Absolutely nobody. And now the floodgates have opened. And
steal
we
steal this hour.
No.
I didn't take it.
No, you saved me. And now the floodgates have opened. So we will talk to you later. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yes,
bye.
Absolutely. That's right. Saved a drowning woman, and I appreciate it. Yeah, when I start doing the stats of who was on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1957, Johnny knows it's time to call. Cleveland, Dennis, and Elgin, welcome back to WGN Radio. All right, Cleveland Dennis gave up. Well, it happens, and who can blame him? Hopefully he's sleeping. Eduardo in Tampa, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm right here, Raleigh. Yep.
All right. And
let me request two songs here before I get into something else here. The first one is Carl Carlton.
Everlasting Love.
Right. She's a bad mama.
Oh, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then Jackson 5, Show You the Way to Go.
Okay. All right. I'm writing them down. Oh, I do go. And we're going to write down your name, too, so I know who requests them. All right. We got it.
Yeah, just talk a little bit because, you know, you're down to 45 minutes. But did you ever live near something like a Garden Grove, whatever, with that chemical spill? Did you ever live near a place like that?
Yeah, well, Garden Grove, you mean in Orange County? Sure.
Right.
Sure. Well, Garden Grove is pretty central. It's right next to Santa Ana and everything else. Yeah, I lived in Laguna Hills, not too far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you never had any issues with... chemical spills
no,
or anything where you had to be evacuated?
No, never did. Yeah, I know, and they evacuated like 40,000 people or something, I read.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was...
Yeah.
Thank God it wasn't
anything worse, so slowly
absolutely. Well, and at least authorities were on it. You know, the disaster that happened years ago in Minot, people actually died. And for the longest time, they blamed Clear Channel, and it was not Clear Channel's fault. It was the fact that the local authorities never even sent out an EAS alert. So I think that...
Yeah, and I was hearing how they went, like, overnight to, like, investigate. And
right.
They were to discover that this was not going to be as bad as previously
thought. Right. But, I mean, they were on it. As far as that goes, and I think there may be still some people evacuated. I know as recent as when I got up today, there were.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
And so, not too big. And so, you know, they're actually looking at what this is from, and that's a vapor leak. And I think that was from the aerospace place in Garden Grove. I don't think that this was in any way rail related. I think this was actually a facility. So yeah.
Well, and some of the places they'll need to do a better job. So there isn't another Garden Grove, you know.
Well, you know, obviously when you're dealing with anything that is highly flammable, no matter what it is, yes, you should have everything inspected regularly. You know, but I'm not laying any blame yet because we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know...
Yeah, there's still an investigation. Yeah.
Right, the DA, because I think it's Spitzer, the DA there. But anyway, they, you know, opened this investigation into GK and Aerospace, and they're looking for whistleblowers. But, you know, we don't know that yet, so I'm going to wait, and let's see what caused it. Obviously, I don't think there's any doubt that it came from them, you know, in that facility. And I don't think there's any doubt that ultimately it's going to be trailed back to a compromised tank, and which had methyl acrylate in it. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was the fault. You know, that we got to know more about what it is. And I know a lot of people are all that. And, you know, early on they were saying that, the first thing they were saying at first before they even got around to anything else, oh, my God, it might be a catastrophic explosion. And it's not. And they've ruled
it. Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But they were worried.
God, yeah.
Yes, exactly. But so
they were.
They ruled that out. And the last I heard, they're saying, well, there's a crack in the tank. It would release a pressure buildup. Well, maybe. Mm-hmm. But these investigations don't happen in 20 23 minutes. Let's take a little time and find out what really happened right. here. And I'll be the first to stand up and say, you know, fry them if it was through their, you know, lack of attention to problems. But we don't know that yet.
Yeah, well, they didn't waste time throwing lawsuits. But,
well, that's what I mean, but it's a little early as yeah. far as I'm concerned. I want a better handle on exactly what happened. You know, it's not like the statute of limitations is going to, you know, fade in 26 yeah. hours or something. So, but, you know, it was mostly not the wealthiest parts of Orange County. Garden Grove, Anaheim, parts of Westminster. Westminster used to be, you know, typical middle-class Americana. It's now virtually all Vietnamese. Stanton, Cypress, and Cypress has a lot of industrial as well in there. So it, and I think Buena Park. So it's not like this happened, you know, in Newport Beach. You know, it's not like that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, it's not. It's not. Now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, Raleigh.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Thanks.
All right, I'll talk about it tomorrow.
Okay, good. Okay. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, these communities, what we are talking is they're more dense. So a lot of people. So when they say they're evacuating 50,000 or whatever, that's not surprising. Floyd in Iowa, welcome back to WGN Radio. Are you there?
Yeah, Raleigh. I'll tell you what, there's an artist named Wild Bill Moore.
Okay.
He had a tune called Hey Spody Odie. I just caught it by accident on an ad, a clothing store had it. Hey Spody Odie came out, I think it was 1947. Some guy named Styx McGee and
It's Styx McGee. Drink a wine, Spody Odie. Styx McGee. His brother was Browning McGee, and that's how Atlantic got him. But yeah, drink a wine, Spody Odie. Drinking wine, mop mop. Now, of course, originally, and you know the song, if you've heard it, they say drinking wine, Spody Odie. Drinking wine, bop ba. Well, the bop ba stands for GD. And you can figure it out for yourself. And Spody Odie stands for. Oh, the long curse word that begins with an M. I'll just leave it there.
There it is.
Yeah, so that's the song. And it was sung that way, drinking wine. So pass that bottle to me. Well, so, yeah.
And the story I got on it was because, of course, a lot of cuss words in it, because the story I got, it was a cadence call. Soldiers in the Army sang that. Of course, there's a lot of cuss words and a lot of cadence calls. Yeah. Anything to keep your mind on the 1, 2, 3, 4, stay as a unit. Stay as a group, act as one, all that for drill, to prepare you for battle. But this Spody Odie, they turned that into a song. By golly, this guy, I guess, Wild Bill Moore, I don't know if it was a saxophonist or whatever he was. But a lot of those songs come from the military. Now, our national anthem, a guy named Pat Buchanan, ran for president a couple of times, he said that our national anthem, the tune, came from an old English drinking song. You know, the da-da-da-da-da. And, of course, they plugged in as many spicy words as they could in there, but what's his name? Scott Key got hold of that and composed our national anthem.
Okay.
These tunes have been around for years, but they just, the Spody Odie, any cadence call, anything to keep you moving along with the group. You know, there's a movie, Stripes, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, they took that Manfred Mann tune, Doo Wah Diddy, and in the movie you see these guys marching their platoon off to the Doo Wah Diddy, Diddy Dum Diddy Oo. Anything that keeps you moving and keeps the group as one,
yeah,
that'll work.
By the way, it's not an original Manfred Mann tune. They covered the Exciters. The original song was by the Exciters.
Well, I'm always glad that you give me this good information.
Yeah,
just like listening to that fellow that was talking to you earlier about that Precinct 13 ballot box was found. Well. The guy
Precinct 13. Yeah. Oh, that's well known. Yeah. And everybody wondered who's behind that. Well, I know, but I'm not going to tell you.
Well, of course not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Raleigh, it's always good to hear your show, and thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, yeah. It was interesting. It didn't surprise me when I found out, but no, there's places I don't go. All right, so 888-876-5593. We'll get to Fran in Austin, James on the South Side, and Brian in Seneca. And your request coming up on WGN Radio.
Praying in six, nights of fun. The odds against going to heaven, 6-1. Nights of fun. The odds against going to heaven, 6-1. You better cross over. You better walk home, or you're gonna stumble. And Satan is waiting to take your hand.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, based on the melody you heard from the Jimmy Smith song, well, same year, 1962, on Mercury. And Brooke Benton, of course, Walk on the Wild Side. All right, so we have Fran in Austin. And I think if we can do this here, sometimes my magic twanger fails me. Fran, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, well, you did it. Here I am.
Yes, exactly. Yes, like magic. All right.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's thunder and lightning and all kinds of fun around here.
So it's been hours. All right. So this is going on.
I'm trying to keep my cool because I usually get panicky during thunderstorms. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I'd say this has been now about a good unrelenting 3 hours. When did this start?
I don't know. I just want it to end.
Yeah.
That's all I know about it.
Yeah.
But,
well, we got a flood watch, of course. We would expect that.
Oh, we get those a lot.
Right. And that's till 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Fortunately, I don't have anywhere to go tomorrow.
Excellent.
So, as I was going to say, if I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, I'm canceling the thing unless it's really necessary.
Yeah, I like that. But, 100%.
But fortunately, I don't. And if I had something necessary, I'd grit my teeth and do it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I was calling because I think it was Andy is his name last night that wanted to know how he could read your book and audio.
Absolutely. Yes, he'd like to be able to read it on his Android.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if this works on Android, but it might. I know he's not blind. He said he's not blind. But if he enables a thing called TalkBack, it's kind of like their version of VoiceOver.
Okay.
And he might be able to read it that way, and the what we use to read, like if I read things online, like I downloaded your book and read it on this thing called Voice Dream Reader.
Okay.
And it's an auto. I mean, they've got much better automated voices than they use on Voice Dream Reader, but. That's the only thing I don't like about it is it's kind of robotic sounding, but if you want to read something badly enough, and that's when I'll, if I can't find it any other way, I will get Voice Dream Reader, and it'll read PDFs, it'll read, online, books, and, that sort of thing. So, but the only thing I don't know is if it, because we don't have Androids, we have iPhones. And so somebody else, might be able to tell you. I know that TalkBack is their voice system.
Okay. Yeah, and I just looked it up, by the way, while we're speaking, and it looked interesting, and so I asked it outright, will it read back a book PDF? And it says, yes, TalkBack can read PDFs and books aloud. But it's a screen reader, not a continuous audiobook. Well, obviously, so it's reading element by element. So you got to navigate, which that can be a little tough.
That might be a problem. The other thing I could think of is that possibly he's got a Windows computer. He might be able to use Narrator.
Okay. All right.
But I wish I knew more about Android, but I really, since I don't have one, I don't really know much about it.
Right.
And I don't know too. Yeah. But, that's what we use is VoiceStream Reader, and it's pretty good. I mean, it reads, just about anything we throw at it. So it's pretty good.
Now, this is interesting. I had no idea. Adobe Acrobat Reader. It says, open the PDF, tap the three-dot menu, and select Read Out Loud. Huh.
I did not know that.
Nor did
that's
I.
That's what happens. I haven't had a working computer in a few years. So I do almost everything on my phone because I got to get somebody who knows what they're doing.
Oh, now here's something. Google Playbooks. If you upload the PDF to Google Playbooks to the app, and obviously, if it's an Android, you know it's got Google Playbooks. You can use the built-in read aloud feature for continuous audiobook experience. Huh.
Oh, okay. All right. Well.
So that might be the easiest since it's an Android, and we know Google's behind that.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, and we know that works with Android. So
So obviously, when people are clicking on my book, it goes right to the book itself. But if you go to the source on worldradiohistory.com, you can right click on the title and get it to download. Obviously, the link won't download it for you.
Well, I downloaded it from your site.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay, you were able to actually download it, not just go there, but download it.
No, actually, I downloaded it. I have it on my phone.
Okay, good. And I didn't know it would do that easily. How about that?
It's very easy. Yeah, it's very easy.
All right.
You just download it like you would download.
Yeah, so right-click it. Okay, download it. Yeah, download linked file as. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I did not realize it would be that easy. Excellent.
Oh, yeah. Anybody that wants, and I've heard a lot of blind people and so forth calling and asking, how can we read Raleigh's book audio? Somewhere I also have Kimberly in Kansas City many years ago.
Yes.
Sent a file of it.
Yes.
But it had, and this is nothing against Kimberly, I'm glad she did that, but it has some places that are kind of jumbled up and hard to read. So it's better to just download it from from your site.
Okay.
But anyway, that's my two cents about that. And other than that, I can empathize with the itching.
Oh God! Yeah, I know. I know you can. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God! It's the worst. It's just sometimes you cannot think about it for a while, but it's like sometimes when it gets really bad, especially it seems to do worse at night.
It is. It absolutely is worse at night.
You're
betcha. You're
trying to sleep.
No.
And of course, it's going to itch where you can't reach.
Right. There's something about the metabolism hitting that just about to go to sleep where all of a sudden the itching just is off the charts. And yes, I have back scratchers and everything else so that there's no place I can't reach. Fortunately,
Gary doesn't mind if I wake him up to scratch or I can't scratch.
And that'll work
He's
too.
He's very nice about
but,
it.
But with
He's
some...
very nice about it. I wouldn't be as nice about being
right,
woken up.
He's right.
He's much better about being woken up than I am. Boy, if you wake me up, you better have a good reason to wake me up.
Right. Something better be on fire. Yes.
Exactly.
If it's not life-threatening, let me sleep through it. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
I agree with that. But with the right...
Especially if I don't have...
You know, with the right back scratchers, the beauty of this is where it itches completely. So you can get to the exact spot without having to give directions.
Oh, man, I got to find me one of those.
Yeah,
I have are those little ones you used to buy in amusement parks or whatever, those little plastic things that can't scratch worth a darn.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not good. And it should be like an extending antenna where it folds up and then you just you unfold it real quickly and you get to the part you need.
Oh, I got to find one of those.
Yeah.
Where I can get them. I'll put back scratchers and some kind of thing and see if I can find something like that.
Yeah, no, you will if you find it. But yes, but that's the beauty of it. You know, not necessarily as good as someone's fingernails, but you know just where it's itching. So you'll get to the spot instantly.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, to your right. No.
Exactly.
There. No, you're just a little.
Right. And then, of course, when you're scratching one area, invariably three more will pop up.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
It's like, okay, now move there. Well, you see, you don't have to ask anybody to do anything with your very own back scratcher. I'm telling you, it works.
Oh, I'm sure Jerry would be happy about that too.
Yeah. No, that's the answer. They have all kinds, and you know you can get them with however sharp you want it or whatever. So yes, look around. But having been itching continuously since a teenager, I've tried them all. So.
Oh yeah, I've had a lot of itching problems, and I seem to and mosquitoes.
Oh, don't start.
Like that love me.
Oh,
I'm
like a
gourmet meal to them.
See, I am too, and John can be somewhere and absolutely nothing. But the other thing that I think is that may not necessarily be true. I think that some people, they're getting bitten, but their body doesn't even react to it. Where on the other hand, people like you and I, it becomes a cataclysmic problem. You know, it just itches hell and waits.
I remember when I used to go visit Gary in Galveston. I mean, Gary jokes about they used the mosquitoes there to run the streetcars.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's right. Get enough of them together, they probably can move lead. Yes, yeah.
I mean, every time I would go there to visit him for the summer, I would have welts all over me.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that this has happened, I'm going to be adorned with this bug spray stuff for weeks on end. I'm not taking another chance.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem with mine is I don't know what's causing it.
Oh, of course not. No, as far as general itching, I don't know that either. You'll never know that. That's why it's that's why it's psychogenic. That's the big word
I'm going to a dermatologist, but usually they'll say something like, well, it's something dumb like it's an unknown skin allergy. No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
I came here for this.
Right, exactly. Well, like we say, it's the practice of medicine because they're still practicing.
Still practicing, yes.
Yep.
In the meantime, I just keep slathering myself with his cortisone cream.
Right, exactly. I'm with you. All right, thanks. Feel better.
All right.
Okay, bye.
All right,
appreciate
thanks.
It.
Bye.
And here I am now after that, scratching everywhere. Because sometimes it is mind over matter with that stuff. So, yeah, I'm itching in places where I didn't know I had places. So let's see what Brian and Seneca has to say for his bad self. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Brian.
Good evening. And all the comments that are fit to fit, I suppose.
Okay.
First off... when I first started listening to your show more regularly, I thought that Fran and your other Austin friends were calling from the Austin neighborhood of the city of Chicago.
Oh, no, this is Texas.
Definitely. They're your friends from when you were working for the assorted LBJs and LBJs.
No, actually, no. No, I met Johnny decades before that. And, it wasn't proximity.
Okay, well, wonderful people, wherever they came from.
Yes.
But like I said, that was a little bit of confusion. As far as some of your colorful Texas journalists, we definitely had them in Chicago.
Oh, I'll bet.
Walter Jacobson, who you're familiar with,
yes.
For peddling the very nice and valuable hearing aids, about as Chicago as they come.
Yeah.
And he was a journalist from grade school on.
Yes.
And for many years, he was most famous for hosting the Channel 2 CBS Chicago News with his partner, Bill Curtis,
with a K.
Yeah, Bill Curtis, who was a lawyer who passed the bar exam and maybe conducted more than one legal case as a lawyer, but definitely, you're definitely not going to run out of fingers counting him.
You're right.
Because he was working his way through law school in Kansas.
In Topeka.
At WIBW-TV, I believe.
Yeah.
And that was when the great hurricane took out the city of Topeka.
Right.
And his live reporting of the tornado in Topeka, got him hooked on journalism.
That's great.
He stayed with law school and passed the bar exam to prove that he could, but then he went into the news business and proved that he did.
Yeah, he was in New York City for a while. Yep.
Yes. And formed his own production company and everything. Mm-hmm. As far as more colorful local reporters, one of the other greats is WGN's own Larry Schreiner.
Uh-huh.
He's been passed for about 12 or 13 years, but he started out as a generation and a half Chicago police officer.
Uh-huh.
I say it that way because his father died shortly after he was born, and after a few years, his mother remarried. The man she remarried, who is effectively Larry Schreiner's father,
uh-huh.
worked his way up to the number two position in the Chicago Park District Police Department when Park District Police was a separate organization.
All right.
He tried college for a little while because his parents told him to, but he wasn't cut out for it. So he took the police exam for both the city of Chicago and Skokie. Chicago is bureaucratic as they've probably been for over 150 years. Skokie, they told him that he passed as soon as the ink dried and they graded the exam. Skokie at that time trained their police officers at the Chicago Police Academy, but they didn't necessarily train him right away. They put him to work right away under a training officer, and they went to the police academy in Chicago when they were able to fit him in.
Uh-huh.
So he was just graduating Chicago Police Academy when the city of Chicago called and said, "Hey, you passed your exam, and you just passed the academy, too. Want to work for us?" So he snuck in over the weekend, tendered his resignation to his shift commander in Skokie, and Monday morning was working with the Five Point Star of Chicago Police.
Mm.
After a few years of just being a police officer and nothing else, he decided to make himself an honest side living by filming and reporting on crime, news incidents.
Yeah, I think he was going to sell tried to sell them to, like, WGN-TV.
He tried and he succeeded. He sold to just about everybody with a TV station in Chicago.
Okay.
But a lot of his sales were made to WLS-TV, and a lot of them, of course, were WGN on TV side. And he started doing radio reports first with Wally Phillips.
And then Bob Collins.
And Wally Phillips. Oh yeah, it was Wally Phillips who got him all the way in the door, but he kept working through Collins.
Roy Leonard.
I'm not sure if he...
Definitely Roy Leonard.
Yeah, he worked for Roy Leonard, and I don't remember whether he worked for Spike Odell or whether he'd gone into semi-retirement by that time. But he was basically the morning man with the overnight crime report.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of scoops over the years.
Good stuff. And there's quite a lot of audio online, thankfully.
Oh yeah. And one of the tricks that Schreiner had that you saw a lot more on the earlier in the day reports
mm-hmm.
is when he was reporting a scoop that for various reasons the Chicago police did not want the address coming out right away, so he'd report the story. But he'd report the story as taking place at the corner of Addison and Madison.
Okay.
Which is not a big thing if you're listening. It's an address. But if you actually know Chicago, Addison and Madison are parallel streets.
Right.
So that was a cue for those in the know that, yeah, he can't tell us where it happened yet.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, good stuff. Good memories. Yeah, Chicago's resplendent with interesting local people, TV and radio.
Oh yeah. More than a few of them, more than a few memories, too. Burt Wyman Ford is famous for, if they hadn't ultimately put up a assisted living center at the location, you could still buy... if you had the 100 gazillion times more than you'd ever make back money to build, buy the land and knock it flat and put up a car dealership again.
Yeah.
At 3535 North on Ashland Avenue. You can sell Fords all day long in half a night.
Yeah, there you go.
And likewise, if you really wanted to sell yourself some Escalades and Epiques and whatever they're calling them these days, if you went to 630 North Rush, Ontario, and bought out the parking garage or whatever is there now, you could operate in the footprint of the old Fanning Cadillac.
All right. Well, there you are. All right. Well, good deal. Well, good to talk to you.
Okay. Yeah, great to talk to you. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Yeah. And so, so indeed. Yeah, I think that Cadillac dealer was known for a couple different. They were like a Caddy Chevy dealer, I think, under a couple different names. But I guarantee you, Brian would know better than me. All right. Let's see. Let's do this and get to hopefully Maddie in Harwood Heights and Dave on the north side of Hope and James on the south side. We will see. If not, we got tomorrow night, three big hours, Thursday night too, right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, I did it. I blew the rest of the night. It's pretty much over now. Maddie and Dave and James. The show starts at 10 o'clock Central, and hopefully you'll call me early tomorrow night. Because, you know, it was vast wasteland tonight at first, and then all of a sudden everything blows up. So I'd love to talk to you. Call early. We will definitely do that. Until then, that's a wrap. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. And above all, I thank all of you for calling no matter when you called. But it would be nice to get you on the air, and looking forward to doing that tomorrow night right here on WGN Radio.
Polymarket profit play, plus murder meets judgment and protest perversion. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 news, real stories, real fun. Betting betrayal, a double-dealing U.S. Special Forces soldier's secret side bets spark a security scandal. Feds say a man raked in nearly $400,000 wagering on Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's removal from power using insider intel tied to a possible U.S. operation. Now he's nabbed, facing federal fire for profit peddling tied to geopolitics. Prosecutors promise a hardline crackdown on classified cashing in schemes. He bet on a regime's removal. Now his own future's folding fast. Courtroom carnage call. Brooklyn butchery bursts back into the spotlight as the trial begins for an elderly accused killer who allegedly courted a woman on a shopping stroll, then turned the trip into terror, slaying her, slicing the body, and scattering grisly remains in bags across the borough after buying blades and bleach to bury the brutality. A decades-deep history of deadly disputes now resurfaces in a courtroom clash where age isn't absolution. It's a chilling reminder that some sinister streaks don't soften, they simply simmer. Sex toys in the city. Downtown disorder erupts as anti-ICE agitators turn a tense demonstration into tawdry pussycat theater, tossing sex toys at LAPD officers as hundreds clog streets, forcing police to declare an unlawful assembly and round up several suspects in a surreal street-side spectacle. And when your movement makes more headlines for flying novelties than fierce demands, the point might not be the only thing that's lost. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.